Welcome to Parents' Perspective. What's the matter with Nikki? Don asked his wife. When I read her bedtime story, she didn't even want to sit in my lap. She just curled up on her side and shut her eyes.
Well, she did have a long day today, Jen responded. After nursery school, she and I went to the store, and then we stopped by to visit Gramps on the way home, so she was pretty tuckered out by dinner.
Hope she gets a good night's sleep, then, Don mused, scooping up the rest of the dinner dishes.
I'll just go feel her forehead to be sure she doesn't have a fever or anything, volunteered Jen. Back in a sec.
Don! Jen shrieked. She can hardly breathe! She's croaking and gasping! Call the doctor! Call an ambulance! Do something!
From a parent's perspective, what should we know about children's medical emergencies? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guests help parents with just these kinds of issues. Dr. Rachel Schreiber is an allergist in private practice part-time and a mom of two very young sons. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Dr. Schreiber.
Thank you for having me.
Dr. Jamie Freistadt works part-time in emergency room urgent care at Children's National Medical Center in Washington, D.C., and is the mother of two young sons as well. We're glad to have you with us, Dr. Freistadt.
Thank you so much for having us.
Doctors Schreiber and Freistadt work together to produce podcasts providing pediatric medical information to the public via their website, www.mommydocs.com. They also participate in some medical segments on local television in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area. As both parents and physicians, what do you consider the biggest mistake parents make in a children's medical emergency?
Well, I think the example that you just gave is very typical. You're having a regular day or evening, and you go to put your child down, and all of a sudden, they have a fever, or they're not breathing normally, and panic ensues. Right. And I think that if parents take a step back and sort of move backwards before that scenario occurs and prepare for a scenario like that, they'll be much more readily able to deal with a situation like that.
How do you prepare?
That's a good question. You know, one of the things that we recommend is having an emergency medical card. And so if something scary happens, like in the story that you described, where a child is gasping, in that kind of situation, you're going to call 911. A breathing emergency is a serious emergency that you're going to need help for right away. But on this medical card, we suggest that people have things like your child's name, the parent's name, your home phone number, your home address, because in a panic mode, you can forget things, or a babysitter or a grandparent could forget things. So you want to have this card really readily available with lots of information.
Right. And in addition to having just names and phone numbers, other very important things are, what is your child's medical history? What medical problems do they have? Because if someone comes to the house and you're in a panic stage, you're going to be, I don't know, I don't remember. What medications are they on? What medications have you given in the past 24 or 48 hours? That may not be on a standard information card, but those are things you need to keep in mind. In addition, what allergies does your child have? Because if an emergency person needs to give any medicines, that's very, very important. Also, what is their immunization status? Are there shots up to date? Is there any significant family or social history that someone would need to know about? And this seems like a lot, and in some sense, it sounds a little bit silly because it is a lot of information to sort of have. But I think if every parent takes 10 minutes and records this for each of their children, they'll be happy if an emergency does arise.
And we suggest also putting it in places where it's easily found. Mm-hmm. So whether it's on the refrigerator or putting it in several places. So in panic mode, you can turn to this card and have it.
So a cell phone number is not adequate, right?
Correct.
Well, that could be in addition. Right. People tend to put doctor's numbers, dentist numbers is also very important. Yeah. Personally, my son, we have had a ton of dental emergencies, probably more than medical emergencies. So that's always an important number to have as well.
The other thing that I did over the years, it took me a few sons to get this down exactly right, but I've had folders for each child so that whatever it is they're taking, I just throw that little piece of paper that comes from the drugstore in the folder.
Brilliant.
Fabulous.
That's a great idea.
Fabulous.
Yeah. Very organized.
Yeah. It's actually really nice. You know, I work part-time in an emergency room in an urgent care center, and when people come in with that information, it's a dream. Or else you get into parents calling back home saying, you know, what was Jimmy seen for last week, or what was he diagnosed with? What medication, what antibiotic has he taken for 4 days? But if you have that all there, That's wonderful.
Right.
Let's hear it for folders. Right. All the office supply stores are going to have people lined up.
For sure.
How can parents tell the difference between having a sick or injured child and having what we would call a medical emergency? Everything seems like an emergency when the kid is young.
Right. Yeah. I think that's the million-dollar question.
Yeah.
Is when is something a true emergency where you need to call 911 or call your doctor? Or you can say, you know what, let's wait a few hours. Because it's hard sometimes to know if you need to call 911 or an ambulance or if you should go to your doctor right away or if you can wait a couple hours and see how things evolve.
My son, a couple of years ago, got a bug bite on his eye, and I'm an allergist. So, of course, I see swelling around his eye, and I keep giving him Benadryl. And as the day goes on, the swelling's getting worse, and I'm still giving him Benadryl because it's a bug bite. Until at midnight, my son wakes up and screams, "Mommy, I can't see." And his eye was so swollen that it was swollen shut, at which point I said, okay, we're in more of an emergency mode here because my child can't see. And I actually took him to the emergency room, and he had what's called a periorbital cellulitis, which is an infection around the eye that was probably started by the bug bite, but in the end required antibiotics, and he did very well. But it is sometimes hard to know. We don't have a crystal ball, so he could have gotten better with the Benadryl, but he didn't. And when it got to that point where I said, you know what, this doesn't look like I can treat this at home, that's when we called.
Even a mommy who's a doctor
right,
has questions.
Exactly.
And I think it's important. There are definitely, I'd say, 8 or 10 things that we should probably go over that parents definitely should not wait. And, you know, either give a call to your doctor, let them know you're on the way to see them or to the emergency room. But there are things, especially with young babies, when it's much more difficult to tell because they can't talk to you and tell you what's going on. It's better to be safe than sorry. And like I always tell all parents, if you ever have a question, call your doctor.
Right, because doctors don't expect parents to be doctors. Parents are parents. So that's
exactly right.
Yeah, we understand that.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on children's medical emergencies.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Rachel Schreiber and Dr. Jamie Freistadt about children's medical emergencies.
With infants, what kinds of common conditions are sometimes mistaken for emergencies and what are the true emergencies?
Well, I think with infants, really the most important thing for parents to realize is that any infant, meaning any child under the age of 3 months with a fever greater than 100.4, needs to be seen immediately. So if your child has this, and this is a temperature taken rectally, and all kids under 11 months should have their temperatures taken rectally.
Because that's the most accurate way to take a temperature. Gives you the most accurate reading.
And parents always seem to wince at this, but right. Trust me, your children won't remember.
Right.
My kids have never said anything about it. And I don't do it anymore because they're older now.
Right.
Fevers in young children, absolutely your child needs to be seen. Also, difficulty breathing. So if your child is breathing fast, if they're wheezing.
If they look like they're using extra muscles to breathe. So if they look like they're actually using neck muscles to breathe or belly muscles to breathe, that's a sign that they're really having a tough time getting air in.
Mm-hmm. Any signs of dehydration, so if they're not making tears when they cry or they're not drinking the normal amount or not making the normal number of wet diapers or if they're having diarrhea or vomiting, all things you want to contact or see your doctor for immediately.
Other things are if your child is lethargic, very sleepy, you can't arouse them easily, or if the baby has inconsolable crying. You know, you should hopefully be able to comfort the baby in some way. And any injury or ingestion, really, you should contact the doctor
about
that.
Absolutely. And there's some things, like you said, where I think parents mistake emergencies for non-emergencies. But like we said, it can be really hard to tell. And I always tell parents, err on the side of caution, let your doctor know. But some of those things are spitting up. A lot of times parents think, okay, my kid's vomiting because they're spitting up more than normal. Or they say, my child is spitting up a ton. But a lot of times I tell parents to take a teaspoon of water and put it on the floor, and it actually looks like a large volume. So you kind of have to put it in perspective as far as what is and what is not a large amount, but it's hard if you're a new parent or you don't know, or if you're a second or third time parent. I mean, I had a million questions even with my second child. So I think that it's very important. Consult your doctor, but there are things that aren't emergencies. In addition, something like constipation in young children is always, always a concern. And sometimes it can be an emergency, but that's sometimes often confused for something that may or may not be.
Do doctors of young children still have calling hours? We used to have a calling hour in the morning where I could reach my doctor at his kitchen table. And so if it was something I thought could wait till morning and I didn't have to go to the emergency room at midnight, I could call at 8 o'clock and my pediatrician would say, good morning, this is Dr.
That's nice. That's nice. Some practices do that. Definitely.
It probably varies practice to practice. And in different parts of the country, it's a very different.
Who is reassuring even with the second and the third children.
Right, right.
Are there different things to look for with young children as opposed to babies that would be a sign that this is emergency, you call a doctor?
Older than 3 months or 6 months.
Some of those things that we discussed, like trouble breathing, that's sort of across the board. Another thing that we didn't mention that's across the board are rashes, certain kinds of rashes. So if your child has a rash, and it's a red rash, when you press on it, it should blanch. And what that means is it turns white. And then when you lift your hand off of where you press, the color would come back to it. It would turn red again. We get more concerned if the rash, when you press on it, actually doesn't turn white, if it doesn't blanch. So any rash that does not blanch, you need to call your doctor immediately, and that's actually for across the board.
For all ages, absolutely.
For all age. Yeah.
Absolutely. And in addition, with young children, they can start talking to you. So actually, that's very reassuring because they can say, my head hurts, or I'm having trouble seeing, or my ears hurt, or I'm having terrible belly pain. If you have a two-month-old and they're having terrible belly pain, they're going to be crying. And actually, I'd like to go back because one other thing that is very important that parents should always pay attention to is unconsolable crying. So if your child's crying and you pick them up and you are unable to console them after a normal period of time, you know, because they're babies, there may be something going on that we can't tell. So it's really important that you bring that to the attention of the physician immediately.
Now, the other thing in older kids, which I found with my kids, is sometimes they can say things and you're not exactly sure what exactly is going on. Here's what I mean. Every time I pull up to preschool, my son tells me he has a stomach ache. So the question is, does he really have a stomach ache or is it his nerves? And it's sometimes hard to figure that out as the kids get older. Even with 3- and 4-year-olds, they can what we call somatize, so sort of internalize symptoms, and they actually become physical symptoms.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
They can't differentiate between worrying and feeling something hurt.
Right. Mm-hmm.
What about older kids? Are they pretty good arbiters of what is and what isn't a medical crisis?
That's a good question.
I think adolescence is the most interesting times because it's really parents have to judge it on their own child because every child's different. Children know and are more aware of their bodies in different ways. But I think when you're dealing with older children, adolescents, they have more to risk if they kind of truly lay it out there what's going on. And I always use an example of a football player who was playing football, got hit in the head that day, felt a little woozy at practice, but continued playing, comes home, has a headache, but doesn't want to tell their parent because they know their parent brings them to the doctor. The doctor's going to say, you can't play for the next 3 games.
So there are social issues that come with teenagers. There are other social issues that come with telling the truth about symptoms sometimes.
Right. So I think parents need to keep their guard up and keep a good lookout and maybe be a little bit more aware for both physical and psychological symptoms that are going on with their child and not just sort of say, okay, they say they're fine, but they're in their room and you don't really know because there's more at stake. There's definitely more at stake with kids.
When one of my kids was a young teen, I guess he must have been in middle school, he was complaining and complaining about one of his knees and then both of his knees were hurting. But he didn't want to go to the doctor. Mm-hmm. Oh, it doesn't hurt enough to go to the doctor. So I took him. In the end, my pediatrician said, take him to an orthopod. So I took him to the doctor who made a diagnosis ultimately that's apparently not uncommon in kids that age. And I wanted him to say to my son, you can't play football. He played in boys club football at that time. I wanted him to say that, and he wouldn't say that. He said, I had the same condition, and I played all through high school. So we let him, it was apparently very uncomfortable, but we let him play through, and eventually it went away. He is now in his 30s, has not yet forgiven me for not signing the papers for high school football. And that's one of my questions. Sometimes kids want to do things that you know can cause medical emergencies. You read things in the paper, you hear them in the media, and it's kind of hard to say no.
It's so hard to say no. When you have a teenager, you know, it's that whole balance of letting them explore the world and be normal social children and wanting to still rein them in. My oldest is not even 5, and yet I fear the day that he starts driving.
Oh, yes, that's a big one. You're right.
And it's funny because now I think we're up all night with our kids because they're coming in and out of our bed, or they're crying, or they had a nightmare. And then I think, you know, when these kids are 16 and 17, we're going to be up all night waiting for them to come home.
Right.
So it's just the worry just continues in different ways.
Right. Yeah. And I think what you're talking about with signing papers for sports because potentially they could be dangerous, I think that's when it's really important to sort of sit down, especially when your kids are older, sit down and, you know, sort of have a family discussion and explain to them your worries and let them explain to you why they want to do it and come to some sort of common ground. Because I think the more that you communicate and if you put your worries out there and they tell you, oh, you don't have to worry, which they probably will say, but at least they know. And you know why they want to do it. You can probably come to some sort of common ground instead of just saying no because there is the potential that you may do this or that something bad may happen or yes because you feel they might be mad at you if you don't tell them yes. You know, you need to sort of put it out there and communicate. And I think that's really important to do.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on children's medical emergencies.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Dr. Rachel Schreiber and Dr. Jamie Freistadt about children's medical emergencies.
Now, this goes across all age groups, so maybe you want to take it, you know, age group by age group, but what would you want to teach your kids about medical emergencies?
Yeah, good question. So I think as young as you can teach your children, as young as they are, you want to teach them 911. You want to teach them to pick up the phone. If anything happens to mommy or daddy or the babysitter who's with you, here's how you dial 911. And I teach my kids also our phone number and our address. My four-year-old now has known it for a couple years now. Obviously, 911 calls can be traced back to the home. But still, in any emergency situation, for the littlest kids possible, you want to teach them 911.
And I think also every family member should know where that emergency card is that everyone's now going to make. Because if you're home alone or if they're with a babysitter who may or may not know, that's important to always know where that is. And I think as your kids get older, from probably age 11 up, those babysitting courses or CPR courses that they offer, almost every local hospital has them, local fire departments have them, people can contact their local rec departments. I think those courses are invaluable. I just think that they're wonderful, wonderful courses for every child to take because you never know where you're going to be a situation, whether you're at home or at school or at practice or wherever.
One thing that we actually didn't mention before is having a first aid kit in the house that's readily available. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many times my kids have fallen down and everyone's screaming and in panic mode and we're looking for a Band-Aid. So I have a first aid kit that is well stocked, that is readily available. That would include things like Band-Aids, gauze, tape, even a thermometer. How many times does a kid have a fever and you can't find a thermometer? But if everything's in one place, that makes it much easier. Put the medical emergency card there.
Mm-hmm. And I'd also add for the first aid kit, every parent at home should have acetaminophen, also known as Tylenol or Feverol, ibuprofen, which is also Motrin and Advil, and Benadryl or diphenhydramine, which would be for some sort of allergic reaction. Mm-hmm. And I think those three medicines every single family should have in their home. Now, that being said, every medicine should be kept high up, locked up, because a lot of those medicines taste awfully good. And I mean, I know my children sometimes ask for it. So it's got to be high up, locked up, because obviously if they ingest it unnecessarily or inappropriately, then it can be very, very dangerous.
The number for poison control is 1-800-222-1222. A couple other things for the first aid kit are instant cold packs. You can just buy them in the drugstore. You just shake them and break them, and they're ready to go. Also, some healing ointment type of thing, whether it's Vaseline ointment or just an antibiotic ointment to put on a wound. Those are a couple things. If your child has allergy, severe food allergy or bee sting allergy, you want to have an EpiPen ready to go in that kit as well.
We used to have to keep syrup of Ipecac around in case of emergencies. Is that still used?
Actually, Ipecac is no longer recommended because it's now a concern that a lot of things that could potentially be ingested, you actually don't want to bring them back up because the harm to both the airway or the esophagus can actually be more dangerous. So if ever you're concerned, if your child ever ingests anything or you worry about any sort of exposure, call poison control immediately. I cannot say this enough. They are an invaluable resource. Our family, I think, has probably called them 5 or 6 times for things. I mean, things as little as we wanted to spray our child's extra saucer with Lysol. And I was thinking, oh my gosh, well, if we spray with Lysol, then are they going to suck on the toys and be poisoned by Lysol? And you know what? It's amazing. They know the answer to so many questions. And if they don't, they'll find the answer. If you have an ingestion that they may not send you to the emergency room for, they'll call you back and check up on things.
Yeah.
And if people call them, they'll send you magnets to put on your refrigerator. So the number is always there. Highly, highly recommend parents utilize that source.
One other thing I do want to mention about medications is that children should never be given aspirin. So don't put that anywhere near them. Children are not given aspirin.
That's a great point.
Under what age?
No child should be given aspirin.
So under 18?
Even teenagers?
Even teenagers.
Okay.
Under 18.
What about teaching kids about what symptoms they might encounter that would be a medical emergency?
Little kids sometimes have funny ways of saying things. So if they're having even throat closing, they may say, my throat feels funny, or my throat is itchy, or my mouth doesn't feel right. And you may not know exactly what that means. They could be having an allergic reaction to a food.
Mm-hmm. I think that that specific question is a great question, especially for a child who has a known medical condition. So for a child, let's say, who has asthma or who has a history of allergies, it's really important to teach that child what to be aware of. So if all of a sudden they're noticing they're having a little bit of shortness of breath, or they're breathing a little bit faster than they normally do, if you can teach them to sort of be aware of these type symptoms and then either let an adult or a parent or a teacher know, then maybe it can be nipped in the bud a little bit earlier than as if they sort of let these symptoms progress and fester until they may need to seek emergency care. Or a child might have a history of allergies to something, and they are starting to have those symptoms like itchiness, or they see a hive on their arm and they're in the middle of class or something. If you can teach them what those are and what to look for, that would be really important as well.
Are there any other major points that you think it's important for parents to remember?
We'll just reiterate that the information medical card is really important to have in places that you can see, that if someone walks into your house and has never been into your house, they can find it. And they'll know the information. And to have that first aid safety kit readily available, those are two really important things to know.
And if you're going to an emergency room or even to your first assistant's office, bring the medications that your child is on or the medications that you've given your child over the past 24 hours, because it's much easier just to go over a history and to have that all right there. And in addition, when you're talking to a physician, it's very hard, especially in an emergency, but to try and remember as accurate of a history as what happened as possible, because really the history is so much of a diagnosis for a physician to help.
This is much, much easier said than done. But if you can try and remain calm in the setting of an emergency, everyone is so much better off, because you know your child is going to be crying and hysterical. And if you can take a deep breath and help your child get through that, you're going to help yourself as well.
Right. And that's especially true, right? If for some reason you do need to call an ambulance, or if you're in an emergency room where there's a lot of lights and action and running around, mm-hmm. They're scary places.
They're scary places. So you're the calming force. Even though inside you may be shaking, for your child, you want to whisper calmly in their ear that they're going to be okay.
And just lastly, also, like we said before, any parent who has any concern, call your doctor and run it by them. I mean, I can't say that enough times. Don't be shy. Don't be bashful.
Right.
Go ahead and do
That's
it.
That's what we're here for.
Even if it's peace of mind.
In addition to your website, www.mommydocs.com, what resources would you suggest to our listeners who want to further pursue some of these topics?
National Poison Control is always a good one. And the number is 1-800-222-1222. Their website is www.aapcc.com. The American Academy of Pediatrics, a very nice resource. On the web, they're aap.org. Safe Kids USA, their website is usa.safekids.org. And the CDC, an excellent resource. We really like the CDC website, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and they are cdc.gov.
Dr. Rachel Schreiber and Dr. Jamie Freistadt, we want to thank you so much for helping us and our listeners to get more of a handle on emergencies and keeping us all a little bit calmer on that subject. So thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having
thanks
us.
Thanks for having us.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. And please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Please mention show number 346 and tell us, if you can, what station you're listening to.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Today's program was produced with generous support from the Joseph and Anna Smith Foundation. Our sound engineer is Drew Chapp. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.